Blog Talk Radio.
Quinn Martin Production.
Hey, everybody. James Bostic here. Conservative Perspective on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. We do it live twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We also have a recorded version of the program that goes out Sundays, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, also on the Mojo 50 Radio Network, Mojo50.com. If you're not listening, folks, you really should be, because it is the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio. With the exception of three pretty bombing programs over here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network, that, of course, being El Guapo, Mark Hoffman, the handsome one, and Patriot Nation Radio Live, my brother, my man, my main man, Mr. Gary Binford with United Patriots Uprising, had the privilege of being able to sit with Gary and talk on the air last night as a guest. One of his first guests had some trouble, couldn't make it, and he asked if I would sit in, and I'm never going to tell him no, because that's a terrific program, and once again, knocked out of the park last night. Guys, I'm telling you, United Patriots Uprising, it may well be one of conservative media's best-known little secrets, and more and more people are starting to know about it. We're picking up listeners all the time for this show. United Patriots Uprising with Gary Binford. Every other Monday. Now, he was on during the election. We went like about three or four Mondays straight and run. Now, traditionally, he's on every other Monday. So he was on this Monday. He will not be on next Monday before Thanksgiving. However, the Monday after Thanksgiving, he will be rolling up to the microphone and knocking the bottom out of it, just like he always does. Once again, Gary Binford, my friend, and United Patriots Uprising. Okay, well... We are in week. Oh, and this is. I want to say this because I know he's listening, and I'm gonna get him on this one. Apparently, my reputation as a heathen must be well deserved, because while I don't quote scripture, I do reference the Bible and God, and frequently. And I know who gets all the glory for everything that's done, and I think. And it just shocks poor old Gary anytime I do that. I mean, I know he's praying for my soul constantly. I am in good hands with God as far as Gary Binford's going, because I know he is in my corner just like the Lord is. So how can I miss? But every time I do that, it always he makes a big deal out of it. But anyway, I'm really not as much of a heathen as I might look in some of my pictures. We're in week three. Of America's election held hostage, and we don't really have any more definite news now than we did in the days with preceding election day in week one. But there are some things happening. There are mountains, literally mountains of evidence that, you know, it's coming to the forefront, it's coming to light, and what it's pointing at, unmistakably, a couple of things, a nationwide scam of epic proportion. And as I was talking with Gary last night, you know, let's just go ahead and say it. Let's just call it out. It's a coup. It's the latest facet, the latest mode of attack, the latest tactic that these people, and we may as well say it here, these traitors, these treasonous sons of bitches, these traitorous bastards. I mean, what else do we? When do we get to the point to where it's okay to say everybody walks around it like it's the elephant in the room? Okay, it is not sedition. And we've gone through all this crap before, man. I've ran down the definition of sedition for you as opposed to treason. What we see is treason. Not only are these people betraying their country, these Bidens, these Harrises, these Pelosis, these Schumers, these Feinsteins, these Boxers, these Romneys. Yeah, they're on both sides, man. Okay, these Paul Ryans, this globalist excrement. When do we say it? When do we say it? How much more evidence do we need? Do we need more Antifa goose stepping down the streets of small town America? Do we need more mom and pop stores going through Kristallnacht? How many more black neighborhoods and businesses are going to have to be burned to the ground? How many Trump supporters are going to have pee and poo thrown on them and having the hell beat out of them before we call the Democrats this progressive Marxist left cancer in this country? How much longer is it going to be before we call them what they are? Let's start here. Let's start now. It is treason. It is a coup. It has been. We have been under siege from these people for at least the last 4 years, maybe longer. They are insidious and they are pervasive. Like cancer. Wow, I rolled out kind of heavy on that one, didn't I? It's true. It is. It's true. Okay, so let's just call it what it is. It is a coup. And the people plotting these things are traitors to this country. They are traitors. They not only betray America, folks, they betray you and I. They stand at the podium and they call us their fellow citizens, but we're no such thing. We are no such thing. When a Democrat calls for unity, that translates into do what the hell I tell you to or we will kill you. Think the way I think or you will not have a living to make. You will not have food to eat. You will not have a doctor to take care of you or your children or your family. That is democratic unity. When I was talking with Gary last night, one of the questions he asked me was, you know, did I expect, you know, after we had gone to Rock the Red, which was a political rally, we went to a conservative political rally he and I went to down in South Carolina back in January. And it was an awesome time. And, you know, there was a tremendous brain trust. And the guests that we have on our program, you know, that's a direct benefit to you guys. because Gary and I went down there and we talked to these cats, and I mean, they were really nice with us. They've always, you know, every single one of them been gracious with their time. You know, I'm just some dude in West Virginia. I don't know about who I am, but they come on, they talk, and they give an unbelievable benefit to our listeners. But we were down there and they told us, I mean, and even what, in looking back on it now, what they told us pales in comparison with what we know to be the truth. And to extrapolate a little bit, although that's not something I normally like to do, you know, we're going to find out it's true. And they were laying, Gary will tell you, as he did last night, they were laying it on thick at Rock the Riff. But this shatters even that metric. This eclipses that baseline that they told us about there. And it's, yes, everybody knows the Democrats are damn cheap. Every time you see a cheating scandal, a vote fraud scandal, in the paper, in the news, on the radio, wherever, on TV, 9 times out of 10, it's a damn Democrat. So, yes, they cheat. They cheat like hell. They cheat all the time. They cheat every damn day. So, of course, they were going to, and they've been cheating for a long time. They're good at cheating. That's how they win most of their elections. I'm not dead air, just getting some Kool-Aid. So, of course, they cheated. And again, like I said, the evidence that we see, it's overwhelming. It's overwhelming. And again, this is not organic, and this is something else I mentioned on Gary's program. You know, you have the MAGA movement, the Make America Great movement. It kind of coalesces in its way. It kind of coalesces around Donald Trump, because Donald Trump is the guy that says these things that resonate so well with us. And the reason they resonate well with us is because we believe them to be so. Just as Donald Trump believes them to be so. And that's what's so refreshing about Donald Trump. It's not his billionaireness. It's not his orangeness. It's not his supermodel wifiness. It's not his, you know, really good, successful, solid kidsness. It's none of those things. Because when you take all of those things away, you take away the supermodel wife, you take away the billions of bucks, you take away the just him. It's just him. At the end of the day, it's just him. He is still going to love this country the same way he does now. That's what I think. That's what resonates with me when I hear Donald Trump speak about the country. As a matter of fact, let's just go through that. I love that. And 2020, if nothing else, has been a time beyond times for us to be reminded of this and reminded of it regularly. This is so good.
America is a land of heroes, a place where greatness is born, where destinies are forged, and where legends come to life. This is the home of Thomas Edison and Teddy Roosevelt, of many great generals, including Washington, Pershing, Patton, and MacArthur. This is the home of Abraham Lincoln, Frederick Douglass, Amelia Earhart, Harriet Tubman, the Wright brothers, Neil Armstrong, and so many more. This is the country where children learn names like Wyatt Earp, Davy Crockett, and Annie Oakley. This is the place where the Pilgrims landed at Plymouth, and where Texas Patriots made their last stand at the Alamo. The American nation was carved out of the vast frontier by the toughest, strongest, fiercest and most determined men and women ever to walk on the face of the earth. Our ancestors braved the unknown, tamed the wilderness, settled the Wild West, lifted millions from poverty, disease, and hunger, vanquished tyranny and fascism, ushered the world to new heights of science and medicine, laid down the railroads, dug out the canals, raised up the skyscrapers. Our ancestors built the most exceptional republic ever to exist in all of human history, and we are making it greater than ever before.
Amen.
This is our glorious and magnificent inheritance. We are Americans. We are pioneers. We are the pathfinders. We settled the new world. We built the modern world. And we changed history forever by embracing the eternal truth that everyone is made equal by the hand of Almighty God. America is the place where anything can happen. America is the place where anyone can rise. And here, on this land, on this soil, on this continent, the most incredible dreams come true. This nation is our canvas, and this country is our masterpiece. We look at tomorrow and see unlimited frontiers just waiting to be explored. Our brightest discoveries are not yet known. Our most thrilling stories are not yet told. Our grandest journeys are not yet made. The American age, the American epic, the American adventure has only just begun. Our spirit is still young. The sun is still rising. God's grace is still shining. And my fellow Americans, the best is yet to come.
Okay, you know what the next question. You know what the next question is. Show me the show me when Joe Biden has said anything close to that. Show me when Barack Obama has said anything close to that. Show me where Nancy Pelosi believes what's said there. Show me where some Democrat anywhere has nodded their head in acquiescence at that. You can't. And you're not gonna. Not dead air. Last night, again, United Patriots Uprising, I found it to be a remarkably encouraging program. Every single one of the guests, it was just a torrent of optimism, of goodwill, of fraternity. And as I said to Gary last night, the media, this whole thing, this onslaught is designed to beat you down, to grind you, to make you want to stop. To make you want to put your head down. To make you want to break eye contact. Get you to take your eye off the ball. And they're pretty good at it. And there's a few of them, and they're pretty strong. And the way they can run their message, and when I say message in terms of, really in terms of electronic communications as a whole, the Twitter, Instagram, social media stuff, but CNN, ABC, Fox, the newspapers. There is not us, but there are folks out there, folks we know, and folks we know well, who believe that places like CNN are on the level, that they're for real. Once upon a time, you could say they said, it's Walter Cronkite. Walt's not going to lie to me. Walt's not going to do that. Maybe Walt wouldn't lie to you. I don't know. I don't think he did. In those days, journalism was maybe in the dying throes of its objectivity. We don't have any of that now. So maybe he didn't lie to you. But these guys today, hell, CNN makes a living lying. I mean, they get caught in lies every damn day. They don't bat an eye over it, man. They just shuffle their papers a little bit at the anchor desk, stare off into the distance at nothing, and then after the appropriate amount of time, they start honking again. And, you know, it doesn't stop there, guys. You think your local news, you think that it's giving you a fair shake? Really? Check this out.
Hi, I'm Fox San Antonio's Jessica Headley.
And I'm Ryan Wolf.
Our greatest responsibility is to serve our Treasure Valley communities, the El Paso, Las Cruces communities, Eastern Iowa communities,
Mid-Michigan communities.
We are extremely proud of the quality, balanced journalism that CBS 4 News produces.
But
we are concerned about trouble and trying to be responsible. One time news stories plaguing our country.
The sharing of biased and false news has become all too common on social media. More alarming, some media outlets publish these same fake stories without checking facts first.
The sharing of biased and
false news has become all too common on social media.
More alarming, some media outlets publish these stories without checking facts first. Unfortunately, some members of the media use their platforms for their own personal bias and agenda control. This is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
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 Yeah. Yeah, I know. Tip of the hat to James Woods, put that together. Terrific guy out of Hollywood, an unabashed conservative, and calls it like he sees it with these cats. And I am an admirer of his work. I'm an admirer of his ideology and his political stance as well. It's huge, man. It's huge. So, you know, the heads in the news, the newsies, they don't want to talk about all this stuff. They don't want to talk about Joe Biden's corruption. They don't want to talk about Burisma. They don't want to talk about Ukraine. They don't want to talk about child trafficking. They don't want to talk about Hillary's homebrewy server, email server stuck in somebody's bathroom in a closet. They don't want to talk about any of these things. They don't want to talk about Nipples Cuomo killing at least 12 to 13,000 nursing home residents in his state. Think of that, guys. Here we go. It's Thanksgiving's coming up. Think of all the moms and dads, the aunts and uncles, the grandmas and grandpas, the cousins, the older siblings. Ain't no Thanksgiving with the family for them. Not anymore. Because Nipples Cuomo killed him. Sidney Powell was with Lou Dobbs, and you know she took over the Michael Flynn's legal defense after his corrupt, compromised lawyers led him down the rabbit hole that he's stuck in, and she's moving mountains to get him out. Well, she's also one of the legal minds that is a part of the president's legal team concerning trying to fight this ripoff, this scam, this con game. She was on with Lou Dobbs yesterday. There are some affidavits that have been delivered to her, and I'm just going to go ahead and let her talk. Sid, where are you, babe? There's the N's. There's the PEAs. There's the PLOCs. There's the pistol packing mama. Oh, here she is. Okay. Sidney Powell, this is from yesterday on Lou Dobbs with Fox Business News.
Joining us now by phone, Sidney Powell, a member of President Trump's legal team. She is also General Michael Flynn's attorney, former federal prosecutor, best-selling author, one of the country's most prominent appellate attorneys. Sidney, good to have you with us. Dominion voting system seems to be figuring larger and larger in the interest of your legal team. And what is the latest?
Oh, definitely, Lou. I've just gotten some stunning evidence from a firsthand witness, a high-ranking military officer who was present when Smartmatic was designed in a way that and I'm going to just read you some of these statements, if you don't mind, so I get them exactly
sure.
right from the affidavit. Designed in a way that the system could change the vote of each voter without being detected. He wanted the software itself to function in such a manner that if the voter were to place their thumbprint or fingerprint on a scanner, then the thumbprint would be tied to a record of the voter's name and identity as having voted, but that voter would not be tracked to the changed vote. He made it clear that the system would have to be set up but not leave any evidence of the changed vote for a specific voter, and that there would be no evidence to show and nothing to contradict that the name or the fingerprint or thumbprint was going with a changed vote. Smartmatic agreed to create such a system and produce the software and hardware that accomplished the result for President Chavez. After the Smartmatic electoral management system was put in place, he closely observed several elections where the results were manipulated using the Smartmatic software. One such election was December 2006 when Chavez was running against Rosales. Chavez won with a landslide over Rosales, a margin of nearly 6 million votes for Chavez versus 3.7 million for Rosales. In 2013, he witnessed another Venezuelan national election where the Smartmatic management right. system was used to manipulate and change the results for Chavez. And it goes on and on. He was in the control room where multiple digital display screens were shown for results and voting. The actual voting results were fed into that room and onto the displays over an internet feed, which was connected to a sophisticated computer system created by Smartmatic. People in that room were able to see in real time whether the vote that came through the electronic voting system was in their favor or against them. If one looked at any particular screen, they could determine that the vote from any specific area or as a national total was going to be against either candidate. Persons controlling the vote tabulation computer had the ability to change the reporting of votes by moving votes from one candidate to another by using the Smartmatic software.
And Smartmatic, the relation...
Smartmatic.
Smartmatic, the chairman is Admiral Pete Neffinger, who is also on the vice president's transition team, his presidential, presumptuous presidential transition team. That's an extraordinary situation as well, isn't it?
Yes, it is. So here's the other kicker. When the Smartmatic machines are, when somebody's losing, like, for example, when Maduro and his supporters realized the size of the other guy's lead, they were worried that they were in crisis mode and would lose the election. The Smartmatic's machines used for voting in each state were connected to the internet, reported their information over the internet to the Caracas Control Center real time, so the decision was made to reset the entire system. Maduro's and his supporters ordered the network controllers to take the internet itself offline in practically all parts in Venezuela to change the results. It took the voting operators approximately 2 hours to make the adjustments in the vote from Radonsky to Maduro. Then when they turned the internet back on and the online reporting was up and running again, they checked each screen state by state to be certain they could see each vote was changed in favor of Maduro.
Sidney, you tweeted earlier today about CIA and its association. What have you discovered there?
Well, other than the fact there's no way all this was happening over around and around the world without the CIA knowing about it. I mean, that's just logic. This affidavit also explains it's been used to change election results all over the world. And it's all Venezuelan and Cuban and essentially communist money that's been doing this. It's a foreign-owned company, as you mentioned earlier. The president of it is Mr. Neffinger, who is on Biden's very presumptuous and immediately failing transition team. And people have been reporting this to our government for several years, including Democrats, and nobody's done a damn thing about it, Lou. I can't even express how furious I am over this.
Well, I share your fury and frustration, but I do have some news to break here at this moment. I have received word from a highly reliable source that the FBI does have an investigative team that is now looking into this election. Now, what that means beyond that, but at least it's confirmation that they are investigating, and we'll see what moves, because there had been no indication that indeed publicly that they were involved. They are now. To that point, I'd just like to show, if we could put up the full screen, under what their authorities are when we talk about these state-run elections, even though they're federal elections for at least a sizable number of the candidates. As you see there, the ballot includes one or more federal candidates, an election, a polling place, official abuses of their office, the conduct involving false voter registration, the crime intentionally targets minority protected classes, the activity violates federal campaign finance laws, all of this laid out on the FBI website for anyone to look at. And it appears, Sydney, that at least the FBI has finally looked at that website. I'm not sure it was Christopher Wray, but someone at the FBI, and took action. Your thoughts?
Well, my other thought is that as soon as the Smartmatic system changed the votes that they wanted for their desired candidate, by the time they finish, they achieve a convincing but narrow victory of the certain number of votes they want for their candidate. This person saw, by what his own experience, exactly what was happening there was happening here.
It's it is a deeply, deeply troubling election. As I said earlier, the worst in this country's history, bar none. And we have seen official investigative and justice department officials slow to move, and it is infuriating to everyone.
Willful blindness. They have adopted a position of willful blindness to this massive corruption across the country. And the Smartmatic software is in the DNA of every vote tabulating company's software and system.
Yes, and it is more than just a willful blindness. This is people trying to blind us to what is going on. We don't even know who the hell really owns these companies, at least most of them. That's got to change, and we've got to find out exactly what's going on. And thank God we've got a president who will stay in the fight all the way through until we get those answers. Sydney Powell, thanks so much. We appreciate it as always.
Pretty serious stuff. And in 1960, the scandal involved maybe 100,000 votes with Kennedy and Nixon. In 2000, it was Broward County in Florida, Miami. That went on for 37 days. But this is huge, okay? This is Pennsylvania, this is Georgia, this is Arizona, this is Nevada, this is Michigan. You know, these huge states and Democrat enclaves. I mean, every clue, every, you know, I'm here. The political science types, and we talked about this earlier, and this guy Jay Valentine puts it together really, really well. The political science types have a word for every happening. One is the Overton window, like lots of these terms. It's not too scientific, but it well describes things observed every day. For instance, let's take the idea that an 8-year-old boy decides to be a girl because he feels like it, and he is then medicated with hormone therapy to look as close to a girl as science enables. Once upon a time, this was a crazy idea. This was a preposterous idea. Then it was possible. Then probable. And now, voila. A boy is now a girl. And if you use the wrong pronoun, you lose your job. Meet the Overton window, that period of time when something seemingly quite impossible becomes mainstream. Well, that's a game that two people can play, or two groups. Coup. Say it. Coup. This is not just election fraud. It is a coup. Say it, and it'll start to sink in. And as it does, at least for you, your Overton window opens up. The impossibility that the election of the President of the United States of America could be overthrown by pre-programmed, organized election fraud, that a likely landslide was turned into a loss, happened. You saw it. And that window's about to open up for our nation. What's a coup feel like? Well, we're all pretty much accustomed to seeing tanks around a white palace with palm trees, lots of them. The streets are quiet, and the means of communication are controlled by the new junta types. They're corpulent generals with white uniforms and lots of metal, and that seems to be our picture. This week may be the first time a sophisticated modern society had a coup. There, I said it again. Not so startling, if you hear it or say it a couple times. A modern-day coup, where big media, big tech, a political party, and likely the intelligence agencies gather to change votes, change vote counts, do it both electronically and physically, and it has much the same results without the tanks and the fat generals in white uniforms. The first result is that everyone, or about everyone, knows it was a coup. They don't use that word because it does have an edge to it. Yeah, kind of like treason. So some folks will stay silent in collaboration. Some don't want to be singled out. Some folks will protest. Many will benefit. Most just acquiesce. We'll see. I mean, coups sound really cool and hip to the people who instigate them. In this case, we talked about them earlier, noted above. They justify it in their end, justifies the mean minds, and they move on. It works in third world countries because for them, there's no tomorrow. The armed forces just mandate compliance and life moves on in a sophisticated society like ours. This is a little stickier, so let's go there. Overwhelming evidence has already come out about institutional voter fraud. You heard what Sidney Powell has said. Previous programs, you've heard what Rudy Giuliani has had to say. You're going to see many more math geeks that can prove there was massive voter frauds, and you will not see a single deeply researched math person saying that the math geek's math is wrong. That's important. Okay, you met Overton. Now, let's meet Occam. Occam's razor is the name given to a critical thought shortcut, which dates back to the Middle Ages, saying that when you're looking at a really complicated problem for which there are a lot of causes, the simplest explanation is likely to be the most correct one. Our friend Occam describes how people come to reason through a problem. Americans, particularly 71 million of them, see all the complicated stuff about voter fraud, yet see that it isn't that complicated at all. Really, votes were stolen from Donald Trump by any means. Applying critical thought, let's bring in another old dead white guy, Bayes. Bayes was an 18th century reverend who had a thing or two to say about how people reason. Bayes' theorem measured something like this. If someone knows something with incomplete information, when more information comes in, this happens. This is how new information impacts the person's conclusion. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to sit down at the poker table with Occam, Overton, Bayes. And together, they conclude that as more information appears about organized election fraud, and people, it's out there, it's coming, people's conclusions are more likely to move from election anecdotes to election fraud to whiskey, tango, foxtrot, people. This was a coup. Some of us are already there. Some of us are already there. Why is this important? Well, as long as we continue to screw around, acting as though we were dealing with voter fraud as opposed to an organized coup, we're playing their game. Fat generals and big media and the coup instigators. When we start calling this event what it is, a coup, we impact everyone's Overton window. You want to have some fun? Just watch the Chris Wallace and media types go wild when we say, most of the time, when one is in the middle of historic events, you don't really know it. Seems like just another day. And then you look at it and wow, I was there. I saw our country fake the vote and put in an early dementia patient in the president-elect column. Now, the question for us all, really, is how this story ends. We were there. We were at the axis of history. What did we do? You and I. What did we do? It's a coup. Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. Come back. I think I've got some stuff from Rudy Giuliani. We have an update from Rudy Giuliani as well. We're going to take a musical break. We're going to chill a little bit. I got to get something to drink. And we will be back with more of a conservative's perspective right after this brief musical interlude.
Around. I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I love that. I sit here, I remember, I'll never forget seeing the movie. The movie's called Network. It's the name of the motion picture. William Holden, Faye Dunaway, Peter Finch plays Richard Beale. That was the character that he was playing right there. Howard Beale, excuse me. Peter Finch was in it. It's a huge story. And if you haven't seen it, watch it. It's an older movie. It was made about 1975, 1976, but it's a terrific picture. And I'll never forget what had happened. This guy was a news anchor. He was a network news anchor. He'd been a network news. It was his career. And in a revamp of the news format, he got the boot, and he had been told the night before what had happened. And this was what he said. This was when he came on the next night, which is going to be his last night in the business. And he comes out and he says this, and he lights these people up. And the thing of it is he says, you know, go to the window, open it, stick your head up. Yeah, I'm as mad as I'm not going to take this anymore. Well, all over the country, people did just exactly that in the movie. They went to the window. They opened it up, or they opened up their door, and they went out and they yelled. They were mad as hell, and they couldn't take it anymore. And I'm not going to ruin the movie for you beyond that, but something happened, something big, and you need to check it out. It's called Network, a story by Patty Chayefsky. This thing is huge. I was but a wee little nipper during the time of Watergate, but I was a news hound of a wee little nipper, and I remember that. I remember the Iran-Contra thing. I remember Whitewater. I remember, you know, all these different political abscam, these money scandals that have taken place, and guys. This, and again, this started with that meeting in Barack Obama's office back about 15, I think sometime in 15, where they decided they were going to have to do something about this Trump deal. They were going to have to do something about this Trump fella. It's going to have the guy. And so it all starts. And we've run through everything. We've run through the collusion. We've run through the Mueller investigation. We've run through impeachment. We've run through, his mismanagement of the coronavirus. And his management of the coronavirus has been as efficacious and as upfront as anybody's could have been. I challenge somebody to find someone who would have made better decisions. I can think of a lot of people who would have made considerably worse decisions. Nipples Cuomo. Snaggletooth Murphy, Gretchen Half Whitmer, Heil Whitmer, Governor Wolf in Pennsylvania, DeWine in Ohio. These governors were killing senior citizens by the hundreds, 11,000, maybe more, in New York alone. Nursing home deaths from those states was equaled close to half of all corona deaths in the country. And they let their ambitions and their hatred for Donald Trump, their hatred for this country, their hatred for you and I, get the better of them. And in doing so, they took off with cheating like you haven't seen. And this is all going to come out. Now, I don't know what this means. None of these states have certified winners yet. North Carolina, I think, flipped for Trump. But I mean, none of them have certified. Let me put that another way. None of these places where we've had questions concerning the counts with these brilliant come-from-behind Biden victories. And I'm not exactly sure what that means, but I don't think it portends anything good for the Biden camp. I think the longer this goes on, the tougher it's going to be. And we'll know if this is going to make things tough on the Biden campaign. Just watch and see what the news media talks about. Rudy Giuliani, this is from, I think he too was with Lou Dobbs. This was Newsmax. He was doing a thing on Newsmax. This is an update from Rudy from about Sunday, I think.
But first, President Trump responding to the media's announcement of a Biden presidency yesterday.
Whoops. Now it's Rudy Giuliani and Newsmax.
Hey, folks, welcome to the second hour of American Agenda. I'm Bob Sellers. Attorney General William Barr is urging federal prosecutors to examine allegations of voting irregularities before states certify election results in the coming weeks. This says the president and his legal team continued to make the case for election fraud. Joining me now is the president's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, who's leading this election legal fight. So tell me, sir, how are things going? Where do things stand right now?
Well, after filing the lawsuit yesterday in Pennsylvania, which supported by 50 plus witnesses that say that Republicans were excluded from observing over 600,000 questionable ballots in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, and only in those two Democrat corrupt cities, really. Rest of Pennsylvania, no problem. We think we have a good chance. Also, when you consider the additional allegations of fraud there, to have that vote overturned and not certified. The margin of victory was only 40,000 after the president had been ahead by 700,000. And I think we can show that this was part of a concerted effort on the part of the Democrat Party to do this in 10 different states, because the same thing they did in Philadelphia, herd the Republicans in corrals, not let them see the ballot. They did it in Pittsburgh. They did it in Detroit. They did it in Milwaukee. They did it in Phoenix. They did it in Las Vegas. They did it in all these places where they have this Democrat machine. And it's impossible that every one of these Democratic leaders woke up the day after the election with the same idea of not allowing Republicans to see the mail ballots and corral them into chutes, even though the law of their state requires that it be observed by a Republican and a Democrat. And forever, we've done that with absentee ballots. Second, we're about to file a lawsuit now in Michigan in which, again, hundreds of thousands of ballots were cast without any observation. A Democrat whistleblower working for the board in Detroit has come forward and has given evidence of days and days of fraud, preparation for it, backdating of votes, going into the polling place with people, showing them how to vote, taking votes of people that weren't registered, and then actually going to the registrar book and registering at the time. She observed all of this. She was disgusted with it. She's a Democrat. She's come forward. She's given us an affidavit, and she's at the heart of the Democratic case that we have, which will be filed in Lansing, Michigan, which will show that well more than the margin of victory are illegal votes. And then a very extraordinary thing, somewhere around 4 or 4:30 in the morning on November 4, right after the election, 100,000 or so ballots showed up at the headquarters. The observers were leaving at that time, so the crooked Democrats in Detroit figured they could count the ballots when the observers weren't around. However, several observers remained behind, and they have given us affidavits. And the affidavits say that these 100,000 ballots that were not properly packaged. They're supposed to be packaged in a big wooden box with an inner box and a seal. They look more like this. Some that have come in earlier in the day, they look somewhat more like in boxes like this. Don't know if you can see that.
Okay. Yeah.
And then we're laid out like that, which completely destroys the secrecy of the ballot. And then all of a sudden they began counting them very quickly. And three different affiants, people who have sworn under oath, this is one of them, Andrew Cito, said that all of these votes, to the extent that he heard them being called out or he observed them, were for Joseph Biden.
Okay.
And ballot he saw had no one else on the ballot.
Just to be clear, you're talking about that occurred allegedly in Michigan? Is that where you're saying that?
Yes, I'll read you the affidavit.
No, that's okay. You don't have to read it. I just want to make clear where you were talking about.
I'm talking about Andrew Cito in Michigan, in Detroit, Michigan, at the TCF Center. He was there from 9:30 in the morning. He remained behind when many other people left. At 4:30 in the morning, these shipment of absentee ballots came in. He was told that there were several vehicles outside with out-of-state license plates. They pulled up to the center at 4:30, and they unloaded many boxes of ballots.
Okay.
Tens of thousands of ballots were brought in and placed on eight long tables.
But, Mr. Mayor, could I ask you a question about the process here? Could I ask you, so you filed suit in Pennsylvania regarding the allegations of fraud that you have. Obviously, you say you're going to go to Lansing as far as this situation. I'm kind of curious, what's the timing here in which you expect to get some sort of answer? How it turns out, what kind of remedy are you looking for?
Well, in the case of both Pennsylvania and Michigan, in fact, in every state, this election is guided by the laws of the state legislature. And then it's the state legislature that has to certify the result as honest and fair. We're in a position in both Pennsylvania and Michigan where they can't possibly do that. And now we will move on to Georgia, where the same thing happened, to Wisconsin, to Nevada, where the same thing happened, to Arizona. It's very, very curious that, on Tuesday night, the president was way ahead by 800,000 votes in Pennsylvania, 5% in Michigan, 8% in Wisconsin. And by the next morning, because of things like this, votes being brought in the middle of the night, the whole thing had changed.
Well, there are people.
And it happened in all these places. It can't be a coincidence that they decided they would exclude Republican observers in every one of these places at exactly the same time.
Okay. So in Pennsylvania, you have already filed suit regarding these allegations, correct? Do you know when you would get some sort of answer on that issue?
Well, it's up to the court, and of course, it has to be done on an expedited basis. We have to have an opportunity to call the witnesses. We have 50 of them, but their testimony is rather short, and it's all in affidavit form already. We have to make a record and then hopefully bring it to the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court. At the same time, we'll be moving ahead in Lansing, Michigan.
Uh-huh.
There's already been a private case filed in Michigan 2 days ago, similar to ours, but not as complete.
And how many states total have you made or plan to make allegations similar to this?
I would say anywhere from 8 to 10.
Okay.
All of them are states in which we have one common allegation and then different things. The common allegation is that when they started counting these new mail-in votes, they excluded Republicans from observing.
Okay.
They put Republicans mostly in corrals that were 20 and 30 feet away and wouldn't allow us to see most, if at all, any of the ballots.
And what kind of remedy? What kind of
things like we have these ballots that are brought in the middle of the night. We have backdated ballots.
Right.
The ballots had to end on November 3rd, according to Justice Alito. We have thousands and thousands and thousands that have been backdated, and we have witnesses for all of them.
Okay.
So we have numerous instances of fraud, but the common theme is excluding Republicans in 10 different places, and the same system was used has to have been a common objective.
Now, if the states come back and say, yes, they were allowed to observe, or even though they were not permitted to observe as you would wish, what do you think the remedy should be? Throwing out every ballot, throwing out the ones involved with that? What would you expect a remedy to be?
First of all, the states aren't going to come back and say they weren't counted the way we wish. They weren't counted based on the law of the state. Each one of these states.
So how does it resolve itself? If they come out, if they were to say, you're absolutely right, that is what happened. And of course, we know there'll be arguments against that. But if they say, yes, you're right, how do you think this resolves itself? What happens?
Well, first of all, the votes can't be certified then. The state legislature can't certify an unlawful vote count.
So the state would not certify it. And then what would happen after that?
What we would ask for is that you deduct in those counties the number of votes that we have proven were unlawfully examined.
Okay.
So it's easiest in Pennsylvania because we've done the arithmetic. We can count 633,000 votes that were submitted without any observation by a neutral observer, and certainly not by a Republican.
Okay.
In Detroit.
You want them thrown out. You don't want a recount. You want them thrown out.
Well, there's no reason to recount them. You can no longer tell whether they're valid or not. Once you remove the envelope, you remove the only thing that tells you whether they're valid or not.
Right. That becomes the naked ballot at that point.
Naked ballot. That's why mail-in voting, even by justices of the Supreme Court 10 or 12 years ago, was thought to be a horrible thing to do.
All right, Mr. Mayor, I'm going to afraid I'm going to have to run, but I appreciate your sharing.
Thank you for the hearing, because a lot of networks don't allow us to bring this information to the public.
Well, we appreciate you talking to us, bringing us up to date. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Rudy Giuliani, thanks so much.
Newsmax TV is now America's fastest growing cable news channel. We give you the real news you need. So subscribe to our YouTube channel and give us a thumbs up if you like this video. Share it with your friends. Newsmax TV streams live on YouTube for free. Newsmax TV. Real.
Okay. You get the idea. I wonder if I could get that cat to come on here. Huh. Anyway, this thing is huge. I don't know how else to say it. This thing is massive. It's absolutely massive. And these people are trying to tell us. And this is the thing. And beyond all the other things, beyond all the mathematical impossibilities that prove why this thing stinks, why, you know, they're on the take with it. Look at the two guys. Biden rallies, Trump rallies. Look at the records of achievement. Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. graduated from the University of Delaware with a C average, the 506th student in a class of 688. When his grades weren't C's, they were usually D's. He then struggled through a jurisprudence doctorate from Syracuse University, where he was nearly expelled after being caught plagiarizing a paper, and finally graduated 76th out of a class of 85 students. His academic performance was so miserable that an insecure Biden would spend much of his political career lying about academic successes that were humiliatingly exposed as frauds. Biden claimed falsely that he had graduated with 3 degrees from college, was the outstanding student in the political science department, that he went to law school on a full academic scholarship, that he was in the top half of his class. None of that ever happened. Robinette was a bad law student, and he didn't make a good lawyer, bouncing one firm to the other, working briefly as a public defender without leaving any impression there, and managing a swimming pool. Successful young attorneys on their way up do not take jobs managing swimming pools. Instead, Biden went into politics and continued failing his way upward by crawling through the corrupt underbelly of Delaware politics. His first bid for the White House failed miserably. So did his second. And it seemed like he would be just another aging senator looking for an exit strategy to a lobbying firm or an industry trade group that would pay him a lot of money. And then Barack Obama decided to make O'Biden his O'Biden. Then Barack Obama decided to make Biden his number two, not because he liked him, but because he held the old white male politician in contempt. The final insult came when Obama picked Hillary to succeed him while offering Biden a Rose Garden press conference for his ego. And you know who really doesn't have it? Joe Biden, Obama sneered this time around. During the primaries, Joe Biden was forced to pretend that he had asked Obama not to endorse him. Joe Biden is a failure, and he's always been one. Not a failure, a failure. His career comes down to political grease and dumb luck. There's never been anyone at this position who hasn't accomplished a single thing except being in the right place at the right time before invariably screwing up. As a young man, Biden got into the Senate, and it didn't take him long to become a national laughingstock, confining his career prospects to Delaware for over a generation. Obama plucked him from obscurity, and Obama plucked him from obscurity, and Biden messed that up. It's like two times I messed that up, getting dumped for Hillary. Now that he's calling himself president-elect, the one thing to remember is that Biden always messes it up in the end. Biden is a failure. He's a C student that gets by on luck, and then it all comes apart until someone takes pity on him and he hangs on long enough to try for something bigger and messes that up. President Trump is a fighter. Unlike politics, the free market is much less forgiving of failures. Nobody stays a billionaire because his investors, like Delaware voters, can't be bothered to find a better prospect than a crooked old hack who gropes their wives and takes their money. In business, you either make money or you don't make money. In politics, all you have to do is steal money. Biden made money for other people, including his crooked family, and he did it by wetting his beak in the vast ocean of taxpayer money that's just there. President Trump had to turn profits using money that people were actually attached to instead of vast reserves of misappropriated tax revenue. President Trump has been in tough spots over and over again and bounced back from them using grit, smarts, and determination. Biden never really learned to bounce back from anything. Politics is just a river that carried him along, and when he failed, as he invariably did, he just spent another decade in politics, and then another one after that until opportunity arrived. Biden doesn't know how to fight, but he is the greatest coaster in American politics. Early in his failing career as a lawyer, Biden hooked up with the biggest crime organization in the country, the Democrat Party. Sensing a certain gift for gab, a glib facility for lying indispensable to an otherwise failed law student and lawyer, they put him up for public office and carried him for a fifth of the age of government of our great constitutional republic, 50 years. Still carrying him now. Biden could barely manage the campaign to get through an interview without a gaffe. There would have been nothing for him if Democrat organizations in Philly, Detroit, and key cities hadn't conspired to up the ante on the ballot fraud to an absurd and catastrophic degree. It's that same organization and its media apparatus that is fighting to drag him to the White House. The Democrat organization carries Biden, but in this fight, Trump is carrying the GOP. The natural Republican inclination isn't to fight an election result. Nixon didn't do it. If Florida had gone just as narrowly for Gore as it did for Bush, would he have challenged the results? No. And then the Democrats would have been in charge of America after September 11th. But President Trump's natural instinct is to fight, and he's dragging Republicans into the fight with him. That's the definition of leadership. Nobody would ever accuse Joe Biden of leading his party anywhere. Biden gets ideas all the time, like splitting up Iraq or sending $200 million to Iran, but nobody actually pays any attention to them. They nod politely and go on ignoring him. If Biden were ever to get back into the Oval Office, he might have a title, but he'd still be the crazy uncle whose Obamanoid staffers would humor him by listening to his rambling stories, and then they would do what they were going to do anyway. And that's also what the rest of the world would do every time they got a call from Joe Biden about anything that didn't involve funneling money to his son, his brothers, or other Biden relatives. Nobody has ever ignored President Trump. Failures get ignored. Fighters are acknowledged. One reason Obama respected Hillary and despised Biden is because she gave him a good fight. Biden's not a fighter. He's still the C student who tries to claim that he had a full scholarship. In a fight to the finish, in a fight to the finish, do you bet on the fighter or the failure? You see, that's a great question in American politics now. In a match between a street fighter and an organization man, who's going to win? Biden has the organization, and it is a vast organization encompassing not just the official structure of the Democrats or the far greater network of activist groups funded by the wealthiest leftists in the country or the media, but also a large chunk of the oligarchy from big tech to Wall Street. But President Trump has the determination. Presidents, like all leaders, can't be organization men. That's by constitutional design. Even when a weak politician is carried into the White House, he falls apart once he's inside. Just ask Jimmy Carter. Anyone who gets to that level, good or bad, needs the innate drive and instincts to wield power. And Americans rarely make the mistake of choosing men so weak that, like Carter, they're entirely unfit for the task at hand because of their weakness rather than their bad character. There's a drive and a determination that takes men places. Some men make their destinies, while others are fortunate enough to become made men. In a fight between a failure and a fighter, it's the man who can fight who succeeds, even when the odds are against him.
Joe Biden never had the drive to succeed. He was a failure as a student, as a lawyer, politician. He managed to fail his way out of the White House the last time he was lucky enough to be there. And you know who really doesn't have it? Joe Biden. That's what Barack Obama said this election cycle. He still doesn't have it. Donald Trump does. Not dead air, just sitting thinking about that. Tip of the hat to Daniel Greenfield, a Shulman Journalism Fellow at the Freedom Center. And right, as I think it's tonight, as a matter of fact, tonight he's doing a webinar, which I, no, I think, no, I'm sorry, it's Thursday night. It's this coming Thursday night. Huh. Well, anyway, he's doing a webinar for Front Page Mag. And that's going to be fantastic stuff because he is a really sharp guy. And I've been reading his stuff for a long time. Did you guys hear about the MAGA rally, Washington, D.C., Sunday, Freedom Plaza? Huge, huge thing. Antifa, BLM types were there. They do what they do. When you take a look, and you can, you know, just Google it, MAGA, Freedom, you know, Freedom Plaza in Washington, D.C., to see the pictures of it. This, when you see those pictures, you can understand a little bit better, is why COVID-19 is attempting to be used as a political weapon to eliminate what? Yes, freedom of assembly. The size of the Make America Great Again coalition is a risk to those who are attempting to install a power system over we the people. COVID-19 is their justification to block the assembly, believe me. We're going to find out more about it. You look at those pictures from Freedom Plaza and all those folks, man. All those good folks. And they're not just in Washington, D.C. There's rallies like this all over the country. No amount of media spin is going to be able to change the reality of this particular political landscape. 73 million Americans, with their energy focused on any issue at all, is a formidable force that can overwhelm any opposition. $74 million people, maybe more by the time it's all over with. President Trump takes this army into a new political party of his choosing. That new political party is structurally set to lay waste to any candidate within both wings of the Democrat and Republican assemblies. A Donald Trump-inspired new political party could wipe out the illusion of the Democrat-Republican two-party system, specifically because much of the Trump movement consists of former Democrats and brand new voters. The Make America Great Again Coalition is the most diverse, widest, and deepest part of the American electorate. President Trump's army consists of every creed, color, race, gender, ethnicity, and orientation. It is a truly colorblind coalition of middle America patriots and middle class voters that cuts through the political special interest groups. Quite simply, Trump's MAGA army is the ultimate political splitter party. No Republican will ever hold office in the next 10 years without the blessings of President Trump. And beyond the politics, this 73 million vote assembly are consumers of products, goods, and services that are generated by the same elites that hold them in contempt. If President Trump transfers and directs that energy, entities, even entire industries, could be wiped out. See, there's no precedent here. 73 million angry Americans resolved to a common objective is not something to be monkeyed with.
We don't yet know where this current political crisis and this ongoing battle is going to end, but we do know that 73 million Americans will not accept the outcome of a political process transparently filled with fraud and manipulation. That makes President Trump a very dangerous entity to the DC system, regardless of whether they admit what surrounds them. There is no reference point for 73 million Americans being disenfranchised by Wall Street, bribery, corporations, media, and big tech. That 73 million person army is fuel for a stunning and cataclysmic shift in the American landscape. The scale of that MAGA resistance group is exactly why deplatforming, banning, and removal of resistant voices will be important going forward. And speaking of that, Conservative Treehouse, our pal Sundance, and all the contributors over there, recently told by WordPress, in violation of their policies, their standards, community standards, Conservative Treehouse got the boot. They have to find a new server. This is not a subject to take lightly, people. This is the reversal of freedom, of free thought, of free expression, of free assembly that's under attack. COVID-19 is the justification being used to destroy freedom of assembly. Well, we're down to 2 minutes left. I guess that rounds it out for me. Thanks, guys, so much for being here. Going to be here, Thursday, looking at Thursday. And that'll be at 7 p.m. Conservative Perspective here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. El Guapo having some technical difficulties. We're not exactly sure if he's going to be on board Thursday night or not. Sure hoping that he is and he can get this thing squared away, because we got to have him back on the air. If not, we'll figure out something, because that's what we do. Thank you so much for the opportunity to hang out with you and talk a little bit. I appreciate it. No end. We will be back Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Patriot Nation Radio Network, taking a look at things as we do through a conservative perspective. In the meantime, God bless you. God bless America. We'll see you Thursday about 7. You guys take care.